Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. I'm Shamita Basu, in for Allison Stewart. Thanks for joining me. Our next guests are collaborating on a sequel of sorts, one that's more than 2,000 years in the making. Hurricane Diane, which is playing through this weekend at the New York Theater Workshop, is inspired by the great Greek tragedy, the Bacchae. Now, the Bacchae is the story of the alluring Dionysus, the Greek god of fertility, wine, and religious ecstasy, who lured his followers into a state of chaos and indulgence. But the play, Hurricane Diane, takes place in the modern day, long after Dionysus' heyday. Now, Dionysus is reimagined as Diane, a lesbian landscaper slash demigod who is spurred into action by the threat of climate change. Where else does Diane find themselves but New Jersey, in the suburbs, to recruit mortal followers to save the earth? A writer for the New York Times called it part ancient myth, lesbian pulp, ecological thriller, and the Real Housewives of Monmouth County. So joining me now is Pulitzer Prize finalist Madeline George, who wrote the show. Director and Tony nominee Lee Silverman is also here, as is the star of the show, Becca Blackwell. Hi, everyone. Welcome to All of It.
Hi.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. Indeed. I'm so glad you're here. Could you actually take us back to the Greek classics for just a minute? What about the story of Dionysus stood out to you that made you want to update it for modern times?
Well, I guess, I mean, Euripides' the Bacchae is sort of the most troubled and most interesting of all the Greek tragedies to me. It's very sexy, and it's very funny, and it's extremely, extremely scary. And so it seemed to me like sort of the perfect source material for thinking about this moment in time where we are sort of trying to figure out our relationship to the natural world. We're trying to manage our feelings about what we may be doing to it. We're drawn to it. We're repulsed by it. And most of all, we're sort of separated from it. Mm. So the play is an attempt to sort of think about how could we get closer to the natural world around us and how could we, yeah, exactly, as a way of trying to figure out our relationship to climate change.
Right. So the show was originally commissioned by Two Rivers Theater in New Jersey. How did you pitch a show, Madeline, about a Greek god on Earth reimagined as a lesbian gardener who seduces housewives into renovating their gardens to be more eco-friendly and kind to the environment?
That is how I pitched it. Exactly. Like that. That was
they
the sentence.
Yes.
They were like, let's give it a try. They were like, why not? And I was like, and I'm going to set it in your town, the town where this theater is located. You know, that theater,
which is Red Banks,
which
right?
is Red Bank, New Jersey.
Red Bank, New Jersey.
That the theater Two River, where I'm a playwright in residence, is they were right in the epicenter of Hurricane Sandy. So the audience in that area was interested in, obviously, I mean, we're all interested in what our climate is becoming, but they had a very, I think, particular vested interest in that story.
Mm-hmm. So then you brought in Lee at some point.
Early. Immediately.
Okay. How did you decide to work together on this?
Well, Madeline's a genius, so okay. It was a no-brainer. Madeline and I have worked on a number of plays together. I directed, I've directed a few of her plays, and so she also shared with me this amazing pitch, and I was like, that sounds impossible, let's do it.
So what made you, let's talk a little bit about your process of directing.
Sure. So Madeline had and has always had a very, very clear vision for what she wanted the play to be. She knew it was going to be hilarious and wild and really strange, and also this kind of intersection between what the Greek play was and what she felt like she could bring to it, and then provide for us, I think, as Euripides did, a mirror for us to both see ourselves and enjoy ourselves, but also think, oh God, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. And which I think is the most truest form of homage, really, to Euripides, mm-hmm. to be able to try and mimic that desire for the audience, which is to both see ourselves and be terrified by the reflection and love the reflection. And so I feel like our process over the last couple of years has been to figure out how to best do that, how to keep the audience completely entertained, and also, I think, bring them to a place where they are both able to fully laugh out loud at the hilarity and then be shocked and appalled at themselves. Mm. And that's a kind of a magic trick that Madeline has really figured out how to achieve.
Now, Dionysus, the god, the Greek god, is often described as being rather androgynous. Becca, you play the lead role in this play. You have to bring a god to the stage. How did gender and sexuality inform your interpretation of the character Dian?
Well, I did this just for the role. No, I'm just kidding. Just been waiting to do this. Wow. I don't think I have ever, I don't know, I think I was trying to always, as a person, be authentic to myself, and the business we're in kind of works not necessarily in fluidity in many ways, in race, culture, gender. So I don't know, I think that just me being myself coming to this role, I think that's what I brought to it. I don't know. I've had identities put on me by me just trying to figure out how to be myself in the world. So I get a lot of, oh, you're trans or you're non-binary. And I really just identify as Becca. So if there's one thing I think that's helpful with this character is that who Dionysus is, no matter what their shape-shifting is, they're always essentially who they are in themselves. So I think that's what I brought.
And Madeline, from an early stage, you had Becca in mind for this role.
True.
Why is that?
Well,
sexy.
Exactly. Okay. Hilarious.
Can't you tell on the radio?
All of Becca's years of crowd work.
How many MCs could I play? Because there wasn't a role for me.
Well, I mean, I will say that, I mean, obviously, certainly every queer person in New York who was working in the theater knew about Becca and wanted Becca. But it's true that the gimmick or the gambit of the play is that Dionysus has been in retirement or on hiatus for thousands of years, having been abandoned basically by human followers, and that they have taken a variety of forms over the years to just sort of hide out in human society. And this most recent form is as a lesbian separatist.
Of course.
Well, it's really, I mean, it was Becca who said, oh, obviously, if you want to be hidden, if you want to be invisible, who would you be? A butch lesbian. You know, and so I feel like and Becca has life experience as a butch lesbian, and it's really, the character is a lot of things. A god, a person, a comedian.
A cook.
Yeah.
Now, clearly the show is very funny. Clearly you three are also very funny. It's also very dark, though. What did you have to think about in order to make sure that the jokes land, but also that the darkness sort of stings a little? Each of you.
Yeah, I think tonally, we wanted the audience, of course, to feel welcomed into the story, to feel that those women on stage were people that they understood and knew, that we weren't making fun of them. And so that in the writing and in the performance, I think Madeline and I worked together and then with the cast to try and make very, very clear the story that we were trying to tell. And I think as a director, that's always what I'm trying to do, is keep everybody together with the same target in mind in terms of tone and style.
Mm. So maybe this is where you might need to explain the other characters that are revolving around the stage, the single set stage with Becca.
Madeline, you want to talk about it?
Yeah, well, I mean, the god decides to restart their mystery cult on a cul-de-sac in suburban New Jersey because it's so obviously handy, right? There's four women lined up in a row, and it will be just easy to just knock them down, boom, boom, boom. And so there are four women who live in four identical McMansions, basically, on this cul-de-sac. There is Renee, who's an editor for a famous and shall go unnamed shelter magazine. There's Beth, who is a kind of a lost soul and yet a secret fierce warrior. There's Pam, who is a powerful matriarch of her own family. And then there's Carol, who is a person who works in the pharmaceutical industry and is perhaps the most detached from the natural world. And so the game of the play is that Dian comes in and has to get each of them to accept them as their landscape gardener and then ultimately as their god.
Yeah, which I don't think is done in the usual ways that I think most plays. I think people wonder why I didn't come in and just kind of make them do what I want. And I think that's the really fun part about it, to actually do the lesbian version, which is like having them fully want to be a part of it as opposed to like forcing it.
I like how you refer to that as the lesbian approach to getting people on your side.
Well, that's not true. Not
let's talk about this play as a story about climate change. What do you want people to be walking out of the theater thinking about and contextualizing in their own lives?
Well, I will say that for me, the play, the question I've really been asking in the play, and which is on my mind all the time, is how are we tolerating all that we know about what we're doing to the world that we live in while we keep on doing it every single day? You know, for those of us who live in a society that's fueled by fossil fuels and that constrains our choices and also makes us feel comfortable and safe, we have a kind of a moral crisis. So the play is not so much about trying to figure out, like, what should we do? Should we change the wattage of our light bulbs? And more about asking us to really tangle with and really be honest with ourselves about the compromises that we make on a daily basis. And every one of the characters in the play is compromising around their fears and their desires about the climate and the world that they live in a different way.
The play is really about our own complicity, and I think that's being able to appreciate characters who want what they want. They want their gardens to be the way that they want them. They want a wrought iron accent bench. They want grass. They want a rose garden. I mean, they want the things that they want. Who doesn't understand wanting a nice house, wanting a nice garden? And then I think the play is then asking you to say, okay, you want those things, but really, what's the cost? And how do you live with yourself knowing that you both understand what it's doing to the world and you still want it anyway?
And I feel like, you know, right now there's a narrative that we accept around climate change, like that either we can have the things that we want and we can be comfortable, or we can sacrifice and give up. And I think the play is also interested in kind of messing that up a little bit. It's not really the case. Like, actually, to be in contact with the natural world is to live in abundance, is to live in a, like, a sexy, dynamic, beautiful world.
It's complicated.
Yeah, totally.
And it's a reflection. I think that's a macro and micro. And in anything, like, when you actually do put inclusion and things that, I mean, it might be messy and it doesn't necessarily isn't something you can trim all the time, but it's actually helpful for the soil, for the for every other sentient thing. And then nature is actually its own consciousness and being. And to actually acknowledge it, it does give back when you are present in it.
I don't want to ask you to give away too much of the plot if you don't want to. But can you tell us a little bit about, or give us a hint as to whether the four housewives, the women in this play, end up going through any kind of evolution on this?
I don't mind saying
that
it ends
just laughing
badly.
Over there. Yeah,
I feel like there's no point pretending it doesn't end badly. In the play, it ends badly for all of us, for the world, and it's because of one holdout, one of the four who just cannot see her way clear to giving up, to going outside and giving up the things that she has built up, basically to tolerate the compromises that she's made in her life, and it ends up bringing down a lot of very exciting theatrical pain on everybody. But it's not, I mean, the ending of the play doesn't end in the end of the world. It ends in a dark place where people are trying to figure out, well, how are we going to take care of each other, basically? Those of us who, you know, make it into the next phase of civilization, what are we going to do? How are we going to reconstitute society? How are we going to look after each other?
It's a real feel-good family show.
Okay.
Well, listen, I hate to make a writer drag out their own metaphor, but if you could explain a little bit what were you trying to say by having the one holdout sort of be the thing that unravels it all at the end?
I mean, I think I feel a lot of sympathy for that character, Carol, who has decided that holding herself in place and keeping herself separate from the surging natural world around her is going to manage her pain. And I feel like there is a lot of because I can't think of a better word for it, loneliness in humanity right now. Those of us who live in the fossil fuel economy, we feel our separateness from the world. It hurts us. It causes us grief and despair. But we don't really know. We can't see another choice, another way to break out of it. And in a way, I think people are just like, many of us are just digging in our heels. And I can relate to that as much as I can relate to the longing to be in contact with something more dynamic and more fertile. And so, but I think that to dig in your heels and to be like, I'm just going to keep going. I'm just going to burn up as much of the Earth's resources as I can. This is not tenable any longer. And we need to be thinking about, what part we're playing, even what small part we're playing in where we're hurtling towards.
Now that the play is titled Hurricane Diane, Hurricane Diane was a real storm.
It's true, but it was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. Was that at all in the back of your mind? I mean, it was a big storm. It was destructive. It was very fatal in the 1950s.
In the 50s, yeah. I mean, I will say that I wanted it to be a little bit of a joke title, like, or a metaphor. Diane is the force that comes and sort of stirs up everything in the world. But in the play, there's a bigger force yet than the god, which is the human inflected weather all around us. And I was like, it would be interesting for this to be called Hurricane Diane. Briefly Googled it, learned about the original hurricane, was like, this will not cause me problems. I see now that I was wrong.
No, not necessarily a problem. Just wasn't sure if there was another meaning there.
I think not. I mean, it was, I'm interested in people thinking about the storms that they have lived through. Now, basically all of us have.
Yeah. Becca, I've read rave reviews about your performance in this.
Shwoo.
Is Diane, do you think, a really likable character?
Yeah. I think so. I just kind of add on to what you were saying. I mean, Diane loves humanity and is of demigod, so part human, and does have a deep love for him. And actually, at the very end, is deeply in love with the character Carol in a way of, like, telling her all she has to do is just open her eyes and she could have so much. And that is what breaks my heart, is that no matter what I offer or any sort of way, she can't open her eyes to that. And that, to me, is the heart. So, I mean, I think no matter what, all I want is for these women to come back to have a greater life instead of it being... I don't want destruction, I don't think. But destruction does help growth. And that's the complicated part of the way the world works.
Right. Being a demigod means you sort of straddle those two places where you know what's best for humans, but you can also feel hurt in the same way that humans
can. And you can't force humans to understand things unless you, I guess, push a hurricane. That's not here or there.
Hurricane Diane is playing at New York Theater Workshop through Sunday, this Sunday, March 24th. Madeline, Leah, and Becca, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Bye.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.